This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt, Patrick, it feels like the sun's already starting to set out there. It's that time of the year, man. I've always said this. I can deal with cold. Cold doesn't bother me. It's darkness, man.
Yeah, I was noticing just a couple nights ago, I'm like, it's 6 o'clock. I'm like, it feels like 10.
It does sometimes. Yeah, and it's dark. I miss the snow. We're usually having a little snow out there, so it brightens things up a little bit at night, but right now, we're like the freaking Gobi Desert. Ugh. All right. 952-946-6205. A lot to get to today, but I'm going to start off the first part of the show today with Adam Dunick. He is the Director of Government Affairs for the Carpenters Union, the NCSRCC, former chair of the Metropolitan Council. He's kind enough to join us. Now, if you heard the shows earlier this week, there was a tweet that Adam had put out that brought some ire from myself, just to say the least, in regards to comparing the Line 3 pipeline, oil pipeline, to Southwest Light Rail. And as well, it has brought up a point that I've had some questions about, the, specifically the Carpenters Union and the leadership and some of the things that has been said and done by the Carpenters Union. As we begin with, and so, you know, he said, hey, it's not fair to rip on me without me being there, having a chance to counterpoint. So, you know, I agree. So I'm bringing him on. Adam, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you, Matt. Thanks a lot for having me on.
My pleasure. I want to first start off with one thing, though. I want to apologize because I made a statement which was false. I said on Tuesday that the union had backed Trump. That came from a story from NPR on September 30th, Trump in Duluth. And I'm going to read from it directly. Much of the hope hinges on his ability to sway union members in a staunchly pro-labor region of the state. Wayne Norden, the senior manager of the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters Union, who is based in Virginia, Minnesota, said a lot of union members are receptive to Trump's narrative. They want jobs. They want more money to last. He said the members, many of whom work as millwrights in the giant taconite pellet plants, do that on the range. That's life up in northern Minnesota. So I was under the impression that the Carpenters Union, because once again, here you have a manager of the Carpenters Union at a Trump rally talking about how they're backing Trump. And I was taking that as an official endorsement. The reality is that the Carpenters Union nationally, I believe it was, and that's how your federal races, I think, are set, did endorse Joe Biden. And I was wrong on that. So I do apologize for the misconception. I just took it. I mean, I should have looked further. I did look up on your website, but your website, unless you type in your zip code, did not show who they were. And it was more just Minnesota endorsement. So I apologize about that.
That's correct. And just to clarify, Wayne wasn't at the Trump rally. He was involved in the story about the Trump visit. Wayne was actually up in Hermantown, and Vice President Biden came to visit with myself and a few others as well.
Okay. I want to, out of fairness and equity, I'm going to give you the floor here for a few minutes. I'm going to let you talk about the Carpenters Union, talk about your stances on jobs and these things. I'm not going to say a word. I am going to let you take the floor and out of fairness to out of the other day, let you talk about whatever you want to talk about with the union.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate the opportunity to do that. I think, you know, we at times get put in an unenviable position to how do we both further and advance the causes and the issues that matter the most to our members and organization while also working in the most broad way we can across the political spectrum in very polarizing political times. I think you're pretty well aware of how that's working out, both in St. Paul and other state capitals like Madison and Lincoln, Nebraska, Des Moines, other places around the upper Midwest that we work, as well as D.C. And I think one of the challenges we face is our membership increasingly supports Republicans and are certainly open to that message. So how do we both reflect our members? How are we responsive to them and what it is that they're looking for so that they don't feel like we are just either a blank check or an ATM for the Democratic Party, while also pushing for the values that our members espouse and support, too. You know, we try to focus on bread and butter issues. We try to focus on jobs, apprenticeship standards, good wages and benefits. You know, other issues like pension, health care, you know, certainly trade agreements at the national level, other issues that impact our membership on a day-to-day basis, wage and hour, OSHA, safety, enforcement of those types of high standards that we expect in construction. And, you know, sometimes we support moderate Republicans, sometimes we support Democrats, sometimes we support progressive Democrats, sometimes we support people that you would be surprised. And some of our membership is surprised to hear that that's who we support. We try to work in as broad of a way as possible because we think that that's what serves the membership best. And it also, it takes what we have as a membership, but we have a membership that's very diverse. And how do we have that diversity shown in who it is we support and who it is that we endorse? And there's a lot of unions that get frustrated with us for doing that. It's we definitely certainly have an independent track record when it comes to making choices for who we back. Doesn't always win us the most friends, but sometimes it's just for us the right thing to do, and that's what we're trying to do and stand behind those decisions.
I also want to make sure, because you didn't get into this, and I do want to make sure of this. You've got a pretty substantial, a very good apprenticeship program. You want to encourage mm-hmm. people to get into the carpentry trade. That is something you guys have worked on quite a bit. Why don't you elaborate on that? Because that actually is something which I think, especially when you look at the trades, you know, electrician, mm-hmm. plumbing, carpentry, they're desperately needing people in these fields. And you guys are offering that option and into a good paying wage, good job on a fairly quick path.
Absolutely. Let me say two quick things about it even before I jump in. One, our apprenticeship programs have been just, you know, exploding in terms of the demand and the ability for helping us find people jobs and career opportunities. And two, that part of our membership is the most diverse and enthusiastic and at times politically engaged. And it also makes it challenging for us to figure out how do we take the energy and who they support. Some of them very strong Republicans, some of them very strong progressive Democrats. I made this comment to a reporter, I think, a little over a year ago, back when the presidential race was early on. Who do your members support for president? I said Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, very strongly. And because early on, that's kind of where a lot of our membership was. But to talk about the apprenticeship program specifically, the goal is to try to find people who have some bit of background, some bit of understanding, either through a trade program, a trade school, tech school. Sometimes you get that in high school. That's less and less of a thing these days.
Yes,
but we're trying to also promote that. We have a program in high schools called Career Connections, and we have this in across our regional council, over 100 school districts in 6 states, and we're pushing more curriculum to try to make sure people understand that the opportunity that's out there if you learn how to work with your hands, work with your tools. So it's a great program. It's a four-year. There are different programs that you do for every quarter. You spend 1 week per quarter in the classroom and in the shop floor. That's been made more challenging by COVID. We're trying to design more of our curriculum to be done online or virtually. But again, something like working with tools and working in an environment that's like being out in the construction field is kind of hard to do from your home. It's obviously not the same kind of training you can do in a classroom always. Mm-hmm. But it's a great program and a great opportunity, and we are recruiting all the time. Our membership continues to get younger, which is great, which is a great opportunity for people to come in. And I encourage anyone that's looking at a career right now and looking for jobs, we're constantly hiring, depending on which part of the regional council you're talking about. We're always looking to recruit more people, and when there's bigger, large-scale projects that happen, it's those types of projects, like a Southwest Light Rail, like a longer-term project, like the Viking Stadium. When there's a project of that length, somebody can start their career there, and by the time they're done, 2, 3, 4 years later, they're most of the way through their apprenticeship program. Mm-hmm.
I will make sure that at the end of when on the social media pages, we link to the apprenticeship program. Folks, if you are, you know, you have a kid who's, you know, may not want to go to college, but wants to start in the career fields. As a matter of fact, I had a neighbor who's, I actually told him, go check with the carpenters because they got a great apprenticeship program. It's worthwhile. Check it out. I'll make sure I put a link out here. Now, I want to get into particularly the tweet that you had. But before we get there, I'm going to go through a timeline here. I want to make sure I say I'm very much pro-union, very much pro-union, including the Carpenters Union. That my questions and concerns have to deal with comments made by the management of the union, yourself particularly, and as well, it feels as if what I have been hearing, and it's not just one or two times, we wouldn't be talking right now, but there seems to be a consistent narrative coming from the management of the union that the Republicans are the new hope. And it almost feels like a dismissing and diminishing of what the DFL has been doing for you. And like I said, we'll go through this on a timeline. I'm going to go to the editorial that you did on February 21st. It's a commentary for the Minnesota Reformer. It was titled, "If You Want Our Votes, Learn Our Issues." Once again, Minnesota Reformer, a very progressive news outlet. I'm going to read four paragraphs here. "President Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign hit the mark with white working-class voters in the Midwest. That's how he won states like Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and nearly won Minnesota. These are all states with a high proportion of white voters without a college degree. And looking ahead to November of this year," "Democrats should continue to fear losing touch with working-class voters in these states. To be blunt, this is what a lot of our members think. National Democrats and our own DFL are not focused on issues that affect people's lives. Here's what we are focused on and what we want our elected officials to focus on. Jobs for our members, pathways to the career of the construction industry, strong support for apprenticeships, standards, trade policies that are fair for working families, wage and hour rules that deter the underground economy, wage theft, tax fraud, and labor trafficking that we see daily in the construction industry." Now, as I read that, now, first of all, this commentary is very clear that, hey, you know, Democrats, we're starting to switch to the Republicans. And unless you're doing what we want, you know, what we need, you're going to end up losing us. And the first thing that I said when I read this was, and I remember reading this, and I said, were you guys ever this upset when Kurt Daut stopped the light rail? I mean, single-handedly stopped the Southwest light rail from getting – he yanked it from the bill. Ron Latz, a Democrat, put that jobs bill back in that bill, to which then Kurt Daut hammered the House closed and ran for the door. And if not for Governor Mark Dayton, a Democrat, the Southwest light rail would never have been built. It was done without the Republicans. And I should throw Joyce Pepin in there, too. She was part of that Republican plot. But I don't ever remember you guys being that upset when the Republicans outright denied jobs from going forward.
Well, I remember that very well because I was the chair of the Metropolitan Council trying like heck to make sure that bill got passed and that the money was appropriate to Southwest. And I'm really proud of the fact that it was ultimately built. So let me just say this. This last summer and fall, we spent, our organization, others in the trade, spent a lot of time and energy making sure that everybody knew that we needed a bonding bill, that we were worried about the future of the construction industry, what was going to happen without some investment from the state. The governor supported it, the Senate supported it, the House Democrats supported it, and there was some issues trying to get the House Republicans to support it as well. So a bunch of us did express that frustration, outrage, and so we have over time. I think the piece that you just read from the Minnesota Reformer, the idea behind writing that is to both, again, encapsulate to me what I've seen in my 15 years working around the construction industry is, you know, guys that I work around say it used to be two-thirds. Our members used to be about 50 to 60%, maybe two-thirds Democrat and about a third Republican, what our membership voted and how they worked. And now in the last 15 years, it's almost reversed. It's almost inverted. It's almost 60-40 Republican. And we have some of that is anecdotal. Some of that we actually have some polling of our organization to kind of know who our members support. And so we know that some of those issues are appealing. We know that and on the other side of the coin, the Democrats coalition, oftentimes the Democratic Party, has grown more to support, to respond to and speak to college educated, more affluent folks. The environmental community is certainly very prominent. Well, and at times it's at the expense of labor. Sometimes it's with both. There's a way for it to coexist. And my point in that piece wasn't so much that, you know, Democrats are bad and not doing the job and Republicans are great. It's more, you need to speak to our issues. And that, I would say that to anybody, no matter what office you're running to, from, you know, city council, state legislature all the way up to Congress and higher office.
Well, but
which is also why I would say why Joe Biden did very well this year. I think he did speak to those to voters that vote on pocketbook issues. He spent time talking about unions.
Right.
He actually spent time talking about prevailing wage and apprenticeships. And he went and he took that argument right to the president. He didn't concede that ground.
Well,
I think a big reason why he did better in a lot of places than Secretary Clinton did back in 2016.
Well, and I want to go back to this editorial then, because it clearly is saying, hey, we're switching to the Republicans. You guys need to listen to us on these issues. What it seems to be is this, and really what this comes down to, it comes down to the pipeline and it comes down to the Polymet sulfur mine. And that unless the Democrats are with you on that, because I want to – I'll go with the rest of what you said here. Pathways to career in the construction, strong support for the apprenticeship standards, trade policy, stuff like that. Can you point to one DFLer that's against any of that stuff that has actually campaigned against any of that? Because that stuff I hear from DFLers all the time. I also noticed health care was not included in that issue. And I mean, my God, that in affordable, accessible health care has got to be a bread and butter kitchen table issue for every American. The Republicans are trying to get rid of cheap health care. The Democrats have been fighting for it. So there did seem to be this narrative here that, and I understand, you know, having a chance to explain it a little bit better, you're trying to soften the blow, but there clearly was this narrative that, you know, the Democrats were not doing enough to win over Republicans, and here's what you had to do. But the reality is most of what you said, I mean, my God, I know a lot of Republicans that are against direct things that you're saying here. But I don't see the Republicans getting tossed under the bus in this commentary like the Democrats did. Go ahead, please.
Well, I would just say, I think it's unfortunate that our organization and other trades that support mining and support the pipeline, we get that hung around our organization's proverbial neck as if that's the only issue we care about and work on.
Isn't that the argument you're making about the Democrats, is that because they don't want a pipeline because of environmental issues or a sulfur issue, that you're hanging that issue around their neck when you basically – they agree with most of what you said on that list?
No, I don't think – we're not trying to make that just broad sweeping judgment. And if that's the way it comes across, then that's not the way it's meant to be. I mean, lots of people – I'll say this. You know, we spend a lot of energy working on wage and hour issues, wage theft, people getting scammed on the job site every day.
Yes.
Do some Republicans support that? Yes. Do all Democrats support that? Mostly, yeah, absolutely. I don't think that there's many at the legislature that didn't vote for the wage theft bill and helped us pass a really great bill. The Republicans weren't as enthusiastic about parts of it, but we were able to bring them along because we worked on that over a long period of time. That didn't just happen in 2 years. That happened over probably the culmination of 6, 8, 10 years of work. And so, and similarly, I think the way in which we get labeled as only supporting jobs for members at the expense of everything else, that sort of reputation grows out of we supported the Wilfs and the Vikings, and we helped to build the Viking Stadium, at any cost. And we would support similar efforts with the pipeline, similar efforts with mining. We try to support anything that will help put our members to work if we think it's the right thing to do for a community. Some people just disagree about the pipeline being a good thing. Some people have a different take about whether light rail is a good asset or a waste of money. And other people would say the same thing about a pipeline or, doing running a transmission line somewhere or building a highway somewhere. Some people think that's one person's waste of money is another person's career opportunity and an economic investment.
Well, and
that's
just
the way public policy gets decided.
It does, but people have a right to, especially, and I'll get to the pipeline here in a second, but I want to go, your argument in that commentary was, Democrats need to care about jobs. Let's go back to the bonding bill. The Democrats were ready to pass that bonding bill and passed it unanimously in the House over and over and over again. They pushed for it. There was full support from the DFL. When the bill finally passed – now, first of all, I didn't see a lot of you guys condemning the GOP about
– You didn't get to that part of my Twitter timeline, because it's there. Okay. Believe me, I got the – yeah. And also take a look at our House endorsements. I think we endorsed – I can't remember the number, but it was 4-1, 5-1 House DFLers, and we didn't endorse House Republicans until the bonding bill finally happened.
Well,
we and the operators and a few other trades just said we're not going to do that until you know, until they show up in St. Paul and do what we thought was their job that was unfinished.
Well, and you did on social media go out there and thank Melissa Hortman, Ryan Winkler, the DFL leadership in the House. And then you came out and very specifically thanked every GOP House member that voted with the bill, which is fine. You gave them the campaign fodder that they had they could take back into their campaigns in October, which they did. I know they did. And help them out. But at the same time, every DFLer was on board with that. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I was bothered by the fact that there wasn't hey, thank you every DFLer who helped us out in this. Even something like that, you thank the leadership, but you never say every DFLer, thank you very much. We appreciate that. And when you look at guys like John Purcell, who lost his seat up in Bemidji, he was a very pro bonding bill guy. He didn't have the benefit of having that specific endorsement that you gave a lot of the Republicans in the October, and he lost his seat. You just barely had the Democrat hold her seat up in was it 8A? I can't off the top of my head remember Sandsteed. But she barely held her seat on. I mean, it was something that did help out these Republicans on top of that, which then once again, when we're creating a timeline here. On November 12th, you did some videos for Better in Our Backyard, where once again, you talk about the sulfur mine and Better in Our Backyard. I saw those on YouTube. You know, and you know, that's once again, I understand you like jobs, but I mean, toxic waste dump or nuclear waste storage facility. I don't think it's that hard to imagine that there are some jobs. I mean, Keystone Pipeline was just built and they promised it was going to be clean. They've already had two major spills on that, a ton of small leaks, and the taxpayers there are stuck cleaning up the bill. And I think that the idea of coming back and saying, well, yeah, but, you know, we appreciate what the Democrats do for us. It's kind of like saying the Democrats are making the meal. The Republicans with the bonding bill put the parsley on the plate. And you said, well, good job, Republicans. And then we get to the tweet. And the tweet, and this is, and I'll repeat this. This is from what I got upset about on Tuesday. All the Line 3 opponents who just showed up in their community on the years and years of regulatory diligence remind me of the Southwest Light Rail opponents who woke up after 30 years of study and said, we can't build that here. Now, factually, I don't think that that's right. I mean, the Line 3 opponents have been out there for years complaining and arguing. And I don't think people were upset about Southwest Light Rail 30 years ago. I think that was a relatively new project once the other light rail worked. But that aside, I mean, there is a difference here, and I understand jobs. I mean, I can propose to you, not just lefty, hippie, you know, solar panels and windmills. How about a broadband network? We could put a broadband network across this entire state. That would be phenomenal. Tons of jobs. We could do this. That doesn't lead to oil spills or sulfur pits and the poisoning of the land and the air. But the idea that you know, that your tweet just – it came off wrong because Native Americans are very upset about this, justifiably. And when the Southwest Light Rail line breaks down, you don't have streetcars plowing into people's yards. You have basically – you know, just it's an inconvenience. They get it fixed and goes. Oil pipelines, you know, they make a mess. And we are generally going to be on the point there. I understand you like jobs, but I mean, I think that there's just this feeling that it feels like the people that used to be in the union industry that love Trump look and say that unless every job we want is passed, then we're not going to help the Democrats. And at the same time, I'm seeing a pattern here where the most minimal effort from Republicans gets praise and accolades. And that seems to be a bad standard.
Well, far be it for me to do my part to try to make Twitter the place for good nuance and debate. But I guess the point I was trying to make, and if I came off the wrong way, it probably had more to do, I think, with how some of the people who read it took offense to it. And I apologize if there was some that did. But the point I was trying to make is all these large scale public infrastructure projects take years, sometimes decades of planning and work. And an attempt to build some consensus, which is next to impossible to do. And once you get to the end, there's going to be some frustration, people that disagree with the decision. But it's also just at some point, you just have to decide whether to do it or not, to build it or not. And that was, to me, what I found in common between the Southwest project and the Line 3. I guess if there was some irony to me, there's people that, you know, love one project, hate the other one. And the point, what I was also trying to make, is everybody believes in a process until it doesn't give them the result they want. Everybody wants to say that they support something until then the outcome isn't right. Then all of a sudden science and the facts, they sometimes matter and they sometimes don't. And that's just how, unfortunately, for better or worse, it's just kind of where we're at as a society, and then having a hard time, you know, coming up with believing in a process or science or a fact that we can all coalesce around. And if that's impossible to do around an oil pipeline, I get that. Some people just don't think it should be built no matter where it's going to go, because it just, there is a possibility and a chance that something could spill, that there'd be water contamination.
It will spill. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline, they just built it 3 years ago and promised, oh, this is going to be the safest pipeline ever. They've already had two major spills on it, so.
So the pipeline that's been there 60 years, we should leave that in place? That's a better way to transport the oil? I don't think that that's a good solution either.
The reality is this, is that we have to, you can have someone, I mean, would you yourself, I mean, and I don't want to hype necessarily how I'd move or this. This is a simple yes or no question. Would you be for a nuclear storage waste facility being built right next to your house? It'd be a lot of jobs.
Nobody would.
But it's a lot of jobs. It's a lot of jobs. But, yeah, there's a definitive downside. And I think that you have to look at the definitive downside. And the tweet felt like it was more a swipe at the Democrats who are upset about, you know, oil spilling all over the land and in the water. And that's my point. It's, you can have an opinion about PolyMet. You can have an opinion about the pipeline. You can have these things. But what it feels like when you factor all these things together, all these incidents I've brought up, it feels like you and the management of the union, you kind of dismiss a lot of the DFL, is the good that the DFL is doing for you. And basically, because one or two projects don't get passed, kind of put out there, you'd better do what we want or else. And meanwhile, Republicans who, if they get the governorship, if they get the House in 2022, will, I guarantee you, put right to work up right away. And they don't care. They don't care that they promised you this. And that is the problem here. The Democrats, you get the benefit of the fact that the Democrats will always work for unions, all unions. And that you get the benefits of that. So it's easy to criticize diminish what they're doing, but at the same time, you know, it feels as like the management, the spokespeople are going out of their way to make sure the Republicans look good at the most minimal of effort, at the same time of saying, hey, you Democrats, you better start doing what we want you to do or else. And I think it's kind of one of the things is, like I said, it's, you know, the Democrats make the meal for you. And, you know, you're, you know, dismissing them and basically praising the guys that put the parsley on the plate. I think there's a lot of jobs that we could talk about that we could put out there that are not oil, that are not a mine, that, you know, like I said, broadband from corner to corner in the state. My God, how good would that be for the state? And yet these are issues that never get put out because it always seems to get down to, well, we have to pass the pipeline or we have to do this. Well, I wish we had more choices of what we could do.
Yeah, I understand your point. And I think, you know, it's not lost on me that we have to try to do our best to both, you know, hold accountable and lift up and sing the praises of the people that are doing the right thing, both by our members and by Minnesotans, by the rest of the people that they represent. And we try to do that. And if we're falling down on the job, believe me, I have members that are very strong progressives that point this out to me. I have members that are, you know, really active members in the Republican Party trying to make sure that the Republicans hear labor too and at least give them a shot, give them a listen. And so I hear that all the way around. We also feel like at times that the Democratic Party brings a lot of attention or pays a lot of lip service to labor unions sometimes, but not when it comes to big decisions. That's not always the case. Some individual elected officials have been major champions for unions. Some have gone out of their way to just thumb their nose at us and treat us like we're, you know, they don't even want us in the coalition. It runs the gamut. It runs the spectrum. And that's how complicated the political relationships get, unfortunately. It's just kind of the way it is. It's hard to say Democrats always do this, Republicans always do that. I just think that there's elements of both parties that both speak to and are more engaged with people, just to kind of depending, usually it depends on their background. Usually it depends on what profession they have or what relationships they have, or if they were raised in a union household. There's some Republicans that were raised in a union household that get along very well with not just our union, but other unions, because they know the value of a union to what it means for a good paying job. Mm-hmm. And there are some Democrats who are business owners who don't really care about unions or don't like unions or think unions are an impediment. That's just the way the world works. It's just a little more complex than usually is able to be expressed on Twitter.
So well, but I will
I'll
say
that I'll try to do better.
I'll say it like this. You're right. There is no absolutes. I will, outside of the fact that every Democrat voted for that bonding bill and was doing that and trying to get that bonding bill passed so that we had the good construction jobs across the state. But that being said, is that you're right. There are some Democrats that fall down on the job. But there's far more Republicans that fall down on the job when it comes to union issues. And there are Republicans right now that if they could get the chance to wipe your union off the face of the planet, they will. And as much as I know you guys have put faith in Republicans who say that they will back you guys up, if the Republicans get the governor's mansion and the House along with the Senate, I guarantee you right to work is going to get passed in this state. And, you know, you're going to be kind of like, what the heck happened there? But that's kind of the way things go. You're right. There are no absolutes. But by God, the side that's on your side most of the time with pretty much most of your issues, especially the issues you pointed out in your editorial, is the DFL. So that's my frustration.
I'm with you. But answer me this question. Why does the polling show that union members are increasingly, especially for us, it's younger members, support Republicans or are open to supporting Republicans?
Because there's an active element to basically turn the Democrats into just a bunch of enviro hippies who want to stop all job projects and they want to defund the police. Mm-hmm. And the reality is no, the DFL is for good jobs, good wages. They're the ones that are defending the workers on the front lines. End of story. And I can't help you if you've watched 40 years or 30 years of Fox News and you all of a sudden are starting to question who's going to butter your bread. But I would just – some advice. This is not a warning from the DFL. The DFL will always have your back. But if you guys keep pouring gasoline on yourselves, the Republicans will throw a match at some point. And, you know, I understand – you want to put that back on me, I'll just put it back on you. You're taking a gamble, and I can tell you right now, in Missouri, in Iowa, in Arizona, there are plenty of union guys who were promised that the Republicans wouldn't turn on them, and they passed right to work the second they got in charge, and the union guys sat there and was like, wait a minute, what happened? The double cross will happen, and I understand it's easy to vilify, as you kind of just did, to come after the Democrats a little bit. But the reality is you're getting into bed with someone who a good chunk of that party wants your union gone. So I can't help you there. I can just say this: the DFL, they are definitely the side of union labor, and we will support you. And I'm not part of the DFL, but you know I'll support union issues. I know the DFL will support union issues. Even if you guys don't support the DFL.
Well, I don't think it's a mystery to anybody listening that I'm a Democrat. I was appointed to run the Met Council by a Democratic governor. I ran an organization called Win Minnesota for a number of years. I don't think it's about that. It's just more about kind of where our members are and where blue-collar people are, and we need to continue to not take their vote for granted. Everybody has a legitimate case to make to say the same thing that I'm saying about our membership. Don't take our vote for granted. Everybody, no. That's every constituency. Don't
yeah, exactly.
Take the vote for granted. People exactly. need to feel like they're heard and their issues are being spoken to. And that's all I'm saying. And if it feels like we're letting the Republicans off easy and we're being extra hard on the Democrats, maybe that's just because historically I think it's probably felt like the opposite. We have a lot of Republican members who said, "Oh, this is just a DFL organization. All you guys are is a rubber stamp for the Democrats." Mm-hmm. And so just the fact that we've shifted a little bit, I think it probably feels like on the outside more than what it really is in terms of, the effort that we put into and who we work with. And I will go out of my way to sing the praises of lots of DFL elected officials and people in high positions of authority that are doing great things for working people. The labor movement wouldn't be where it is right now without the Democratic Party. The Wagner Act was passed in 1935 by FDR and a progressive Congress, and then it was undermined in 1947 with Taft-Hartley. I know labor history as well as anybody around, and I can make that argument, six ways from Sunday to our members and anyone else that will listen. But I will just say we need to keep the focus on working people and working people's issues.
And I'm all for that. I'm horribly late. We've gone 40 minutes here, 35 minutes, but we're horribly late. I'm going to have to wrap it up. I would just say this. If you are interested in history, I check out what the Republicans have done in states where they've gotten complete control because they passed right to work. And they, you know, and a lot of Republicans promised the union they wouldn't do that if you put them in charge, and they did it right away. So the DFL has been delivering, and it's frustrating to see them have to constantly have to defend their actions. So that's the frustrating part. Adam Dunick, once again, the make sure I got it right, the Director of Government Affairs for the Carpenters Union, the chair and former chair of the Metropolitan Council. Adam, I appreciate the time, and I will make sure I get that link out for the apprenticeship program. Thank you very much. We are horribly late. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. And I want to thank Adam for coming on, but my point is, and I'm going to stand by it, is that it's you're wondering why the membership of your union is shifting more to the Democrats. I'll say it bluntly. Why aren't your members more aware of which political party has done far more for them and their political rights? You talked about political history. And the reality is that right now, Republicans, when they get in charge, will write to work you guys. They will get rid of your union. They will basically do everything in their power to weaken you. And trust me, they don't mind. They hate the teachers union. They hate the nurses union. They will use you as collateral damage. And you'll have that Republican who said, oh, I won't do this, saying, gee, willikers, I had to do this because it was a part of a larger bill. Sorry. Now, the DFL has been helping you. And will continue to be there helping you, even if you're not willing to take that help and assistance. It's just that's the narrative. The narrative that has been coming from the Carpenters Union this year has been that, you know, Democrats who are doing everything in their power, voting in unison for the bonding bill, you know, working on health care issues, working on job issues, trying to get jobs passed, that they're basically, you know, what have you done for me lately? And meanwhile, the Republicans, after 5 months of stalling the bonding bill, you know, they go out of their way to praise all these Republicans who finally did the right job while the Democrats have been doing the right job from the beginning. And when you start going out there and putting out Republican talking points about the mine, you know, like you said, nuance on Twitter is hard to come by. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are bothered by a pipeline. Or a nuclear waste storage facility, or a sulfur mine. You can be pro-jobs and against really bad jobs and really bad projects. I stand by my bit. And once again, it's not the union membership rank and file that I'm upset with. It's the spokespeople for the union that have put out this, you know, Republicans can do no wrong. Democrats can seem to do no right. And that, by the way, if you're wondering why the Democrats are turning, your members are turning away from the Democrats, maybe you should look at that. Maybe you should, coming from the leadership. Maybe that might be the first place to look. Give everyone a class on who's been fighting for wage laws and family bills and health care. 952-946-6205. Speaking of healthcare, 92 additional COVID-19 deaths and 6,166 lab-confirmed infections were reported Thursday in Minnesota, which is jockeying with the Dakotas for the nation's highest rate of new cases in the pandemic. Thanks, Dakotas. And thanks all you Minnesota Republicans who are out there screaming, wearing face mask is Hitler. Oh, God. It's because the Republicans of this state are there's a large part of this problem that's right at their feet because they told people not to socially distance. They demanded businesses be open. They said face masks don't matter. And people are dying. This is the Republicans that have done this. Why other states are not nearly as bad as Minnesota, it's because of the Republicans. And, of course, the bleed over from you know, the Dakotas. Thanks, guys. Thursday's update, the Minnesota Department of Health brought the state's totals in the pandemic to 3,784 deaths, 333,626 infections, While daily COVID numbers tend to be elevated on Thursdays, the latest report represented the second highest daily toll of deaths in the pandemic. The figures include a jail inmate, 42 people who lived in private residences, 48 people who lived in long-term care and have tended to be an elevated risk of severe COVID because of their ages. Governor Walz on Wednesday said Minnesotans might be excited by news COVID-19 vaccines are coming, but they need to dig deep and stick with the mask wearing. You need to, because even when the vaccines start coming on out, it's going to be a while before we get up to a point where enough of the population is vaccinated to where the vaccine will work. The nation's second highest rate of infections on Tuesday, Minnesota had the nation's second highest rate of infections per million people. The coronavirus, according to the COVID exit strategy website, only South Dakota had a higher rate. God, it's funny just watching all these Republicans saying, I wish we could be like Kristi Noem over there in South Dakota. Yeah, super spreader Noem over there. Dashboards show that 1,110 of the 1,212 immediately available ICU beds were occupied by patients with COVID-19 or unrelated medical concerns. So, yeah, it's – but sure, I'm sure a Republican would be in charge here that the state wouldn't be in so much better off. As long as we gave the tax cuts first, as long as billionaires and millionaires got 6 or 7 tax cuts, then they'd think about maybe we'll start helping out the hospitals and stuff. This is a mess because the Republicans intentionally made it a mess. And I am not going to sit by, and I want everyone who's listening to me right now, Governor Walz has worked with the Mayo Clinic, has worked with the University of Minnesota, has worked with the health professionals to come up with a game plan. The Republicans in this state openly revolted against it and tried their hardest to kill as many Minnesotans as possible with their irresponsible rhetoric. And do not allow them to try to paint this as a Walz failure. Walz has done everything in his power while these sycophants are out there doing everything in their power to basically kill off as many Minnesotans as possible. It's sad. Jim is in St. Louis Park. Let's take 2 callers really, really quick. Welcome in, Jim.
Matt, I'm a carpenter, you know, and I give to 950. I support you financially, and I have to say, you know, out being out in the job this fall, of like the 25 carpenters I worked with, 3 or 4 of us voted for Biden. And when I talk to carpenters on the job, they can give me a string of Republican talking points. They, you know, the left just needs to have more of a media presence. You know, 1,500 radio stations. It's pounded into their heads every day. I had a carpenter tell me that Republicans are more fiscally responsible. I'm like, what are you talking about? Borrow and spend Republicans?
Well, the deficit's the worst it's ever been.
Socialism so many times.
Oh, God. You know, well, and Jim, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. Here's and thanks for calling. I'm glad you're a union worker. I'm glad you're working there. What I'll say is this, that first of all, yeah, the fiscal – you mean the massive deficit? And by the way, there's nothing you can look at Trump and say he succeeded at. The trade war has been a disaster. It's wiped out our trade markets for years to come. You know, even in New York construction, there's known the Trump maneuver where he basically would get you guys out – trade unions, the cement pourers, the plumbers, the electricians, the carpenters. They'd get them on site, get them to work, and then he would refuse to pay you. You're right. I mean, there is a narrative that is pushed that, you know, if you want good jobs, you've got to go with the Republicans. No, the Republicans, it's only the fact that Minnesota's got a strong DFL vein that we haven't flipped. And there is no excuse, if you are a union member, to look at every other state that gave Republicans the chance to show that they cared about unions. And the minute the Republicans got in charge of every other state, they got rid of the unions, got rid of them. Right to work laws. Now, if you can keep saying, well, maybe they'll do it differently for us this time, I don't think you should take that risk. But you're right. You know, it's hard, especially when, like I said, and I think I made my point very clear here with Adam Dunick, there seems to be a narrative that's being pushed by the union itself. The union heads, the union management itself, I should say, be clear there. John is in Robbinsdale. Welcome on in, John.
I am calling to compliment you on your handling of the previous discussion. Unfortunately, the labor person is has difficulty seeing the Republican or past the Republican side of things and to the accuracy of your remarks. But anyway, my thoughts are that the destruction on the natural resources and the terrain of northern Minnesota has something to do with whether or not all these projects should be permitted. Secondly, the Republican labor folks ought to understand that for 88 years, the Democrats have been taking care of them. It's the Republicans in 1946 that passed the Taft-Hartley Law, which put the first big dent in labor's powers.
Yeah.
If they want an example, look at Wisconsin and the state of its unions now after Scott Walker and the demolition of the union authority, both public and private unions in the state of Wisconsin.
And John, I got to cut you off there because I got to get this break in because I was so long. No, yeah, look to the east. Look at what they did in Wisconsin to the unions. You want to trust Republicans? Look at their track record. And I'm sure they come on, gee, will, golly gosh, you know, we're not about defunding the police. We're not about hippo-liberal environmentalists. We're not pro-abortion. We're just for the ma and pa working class. Gotta give me a chance. My dad was out there working hard in the union. You need to trust me. And the minute you put him in power, hey, by the way, so long, union. Yeah, go look at Wisconsin. Union jobs. I mean, we tracked it after Scott Walker over there. We tracked it over there. I think they lost the average job in Wisconsin lost $17,000 a year. The average job lost $17,000 a year under Scott Walker. You want that here? I can't help you. There's enough evidence here. There's enough evidence here on who's working on your side and who's working against you. And I will say this. I mean, Adam Dunick is not necessarily pushing out Republican talking points, but he definitely – there are times, as I think I pointed out very clearly, there seems to be they're playing favorites while diminishing and dismissing what the DFL had been doing. That's – and I think I proved my point with that. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Someone upset with me because I said nuclear wrong. There's a nuclear. Yeah, nuclear. Yeah, it's realtor. It's time for Broadcasting Enunciation 101. Thanks, guys. Pam, for listening there. And thanks for holding me. Correct me on that. That's, yeah. 952-946-6205. The other story I wanted to get to today, 3M will cut another 2,900 jobs in 2021 as the coronavirus pandemic continues to change the economy. The COVID-19 pandemic has advanced a pace and changed and disrupted the markets around the world, increasing the need for companies to adapt faster, said Mike Roman, 3M's chief executive, in his statement. At the same time, we are seeing significant opportunities from our new operating model, which we launched at the start of the year. I'm a little confused by this. Isn't 3M like one of the major suppliers of masks and you know the PPE, personal protective equipment? Aren't they the one of the most? You guys have had a pretty big year on this. I'm a little surprised that you guys are cutting jobs, but I want to remind everyone out there who is listening to me right now: this is the Trump economy. This is the Trump economy. This is absolutely what the Trump economy is. You can't just basically, you know, say that Trump is great and then not look at the massive budget deficit. Oh, by the way, here's a little humdinger for you. You remember that tax bill he passed in 2017 with Republicans? Funny story, they put a poison pill in it that kicks in 2021, where basically your taxes will go up dramatically because the entire point of the bill was to give wealthy people money, take out a loan to give the wealthy people the money, and then pay back that loan with massive interest paid for by the middle and lower class. Great! The 3M restructuring is expected to save the Maplewood-based company $200 million to $250 million pre-tax in 2021. 3M to implement the changes expects to take a pre-tax charge of $250 million. This is the Trump economy. Your trade markets, they're not coming back, by the way. And trade markets. And I know there's a lot of Republicans that like to point out, well, he did a lot to steal. Yeah, he didn't do anything. He basically allowed international steel to come back in here, and our foundries died. And yeah, none of it. None of it. Trump has been horrific for the economy. He's been horrific for the working class. He's been horrific for the unions. He's been horrific for America. When will we learn? We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.